Today's broadcast was originally recorded on February 17th, 2026.
I may be small.
I may be small.
But I am.
But I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I may make a mistake.
I may make a mistake.
But I am.
But I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
My clothes are different.
My clothes are different.
My face is different.
My face is different.
My hair is different.
My hair is different.
But I am.
But I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
I am black.
Brown,
white,
white.
I speak a different language,
but I must be respected,
protected,
never rejected.
I am God's child.
I am
somebody.
Somebody.
Give yourself a big hand.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, an all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. And welcome to the Bradcast. We are now not only in election season, Desi Doyen.
Yes.
For the 2026 midterms. We're now in the middle of the actual elections.
Oh, my.
Yes, we're there with early voting now underway for the 2026 primaries. More on that with my guest, Jenny Cohn, joining us momentarily. Also, Desi Doyen's latest Green News Report coming up a little bit later.
Yes.
Because we are always in the middle of global heating season, it seems.
That one never ends. This is
but,
true.
But very quickly in, not unrelated matters, the Reverend Jesse L. Jackson, a protege of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. and two-time presidential candidate who led the civil rights movement for decades after King's assassination, died on Tuesday. Jackson, who had a rare neurological disorder, died at home in Chicago, surrounded by family. As AP notes today, he led a lifetime of crusades in the United States and abroad, advocating for the poor and underrepresented on issues including voting rights and job opportunities, education, health care, and much more. He scored diplomatic victories with world leaders and through his Rainbow Push Coalition channeled cries for black pride and self-determination into corporate boardrooms, pressuring executives to make America a more open and equitable society. And when he declared, "I am somebody," in a poem that he often repeated, he sought to reach people of all colors, as you heard at the top of the show, that from Sesame Street, I think.
Yes, that was Sesame Street, a bunch of children in 1972. Sweet, sweet video.
It was a message that he took literally and personally, having risen from obscurity in the segregated South to become America's best known civil rights activist since King. Fellow civil rights activist, the Reverend Al Sharpton, said Jackson, his mentor, quote, was not simply a civil rights leader. He was a movement unto himself. He taught me that protests must have purpose, said Sharpton, that faith must have feet, and that justice is not seasonal. It is daily work. He added that Jackson taught, quote, trying is as important as triumph, that you do not wait for the dream to come true. You make it real. Jackson ran twice for president of the United States and did better than any black politician had before President Barack Obama. Jackson won 13 primaries and caucuses toward the Democratic nomination in 1988, 4 years after his first failed attempt. His success left supporters chanting another Jackson slogan, "Keep hope alive." Reverend Jesse Jackson, dead on Tuesday at the age of 84. In other news regarding elections and presidents, things are not going well for our current one. As CNN's Harry Enten pointed out on Washington's birthday, that, of course, the holiday celebrated on Monday, which I realize many now regard as President's Day, but it is not. It is still officially, according to congressional statute, Washington's birthday, which is what we're going to go with, at least for a few more years around here for some reason, I think. Anyway, here was the colorful Enten on CNN following the release of a host of new polling released over the past several days in the run-up to Washington's birthday on Monday.
Let's take a look at another president, though. President Donald John Trump. Look at this. I got four numbers across for you on this screen here. They are all second term lows for the given pollster. What are we talking about? AP Newark, 26 points below water. NBC, 22 points below water. Yahoo YouGov, 20 points below water. Quinnipiac, 19 points below water. So we're ranging from negative 19 points all the way to negative 26 points. You know, Kate, there's this question that folks keep asking, you know, where is the floor for Donald Trump? And I'm not sure there is a floor, because if there is one, Donald Trump, at least in term number two, has just fallen through it to another low level.
How does this compare with his first term, and how does this compare with Joe Biden?
Okay, so we look at these numbers right here. One of the things that Donald Trump had been arguing, his proponents have been arguing, oh, you know what, he's doing better than he was doing in term number one. No longer is that the case. What are we talking about here? Okay, net approval rating at this point in the term. Look at this. 22 points below water on average when you average all the pollsters from the last slide. That is actually lower. That is lower than he was at this point in term number one when he was 17 points below water. So he's doing 5 points worse, and he's doing way worse than Joe Biden was doing at this point in his term number one when he was 13 points below water. So the bottom line is this. Donald Trump is setting new records for himself in term number two, setting new records for himself compared to where he was at this point in term number one, and he's doing worse than Joe Biden, which is, of course, the comparison that Donald Trump does not want to be, because we all know what happened to Joe Biden. His party lost the House in term number one, that midterm elections, and, of course, Joe Biden was not reelected to another term. At this point, the numbers are no bueno for the president of the United States.
What's driving this that you're seeing right now?
Okay, Kate. You know what? This is the segment. We have done it over and over and over again because he keeps setting new lows for himself. What are we talking about? Well, we're talking about independence. We're talking about independence. When you lose the center of the electorate, you lose the American people. Trump's net approval rating among independents, you know, at this point, you go back term number one, he was 17 points below water. Now, according to Quinnipiac, he is 27 points below water. I don't understand how this works out well for the president of the United States. When you are 27 points below water, underwater, with the center of the electorate, with independents, you lose, your party loses. You know, I've made the comparisons before, you know, oh, he's more underwater than Greg Louganis. I've made the comparisons with all those different divers. And the bottom line is this, you can continue to make those, but over time, when you keep making those same comparisons, they run a little bit old. But at this point, I don't really know who to even compare Donald Trump to, because he's just so low, and he's so low with the center of the electorate.
Yeah, setting new records for all-time lows sounds about right. Who to compare it to? Atlantis, Poseidon.
Oh, there you go.
The Titanic. Anyway, 27 points underwater among independents. Enten does not understand how that works out well for Trump. Well, his party loses, right? And say what you want about Trump's diminishing cognitive abilities at this point. He is well enough to know that his party is headed for a rout this November, at least on this track, because he is leading them toward disaster. So if you can't win an election by being popular among the electorate and you're not willing to offer policies that people, you know, actually like, well, what then? Well, change the electorate. At least that's the choice that Donald Trump seems to be going with this year, and at least some in his party seem willing to follow him over that cliff. Of course, we have long ago begun our coverage of the critical 2026 midterms, but as of today, it's official. Early voting has now begun in those critical elections with, as of today, early voting now underway for midterm primaries in Arkansas, North Carolina, and Texas, which are first out of the gate this year with their primary election day on March 3rd. The gaming of those elections, however, has been long underway by Donald Trump and his Republican Party via numerous means, including their gerrymandering war, which was kicked off in Texas and Missouri and North Carolina and responded to in kind so far by Democrats in California and Virginia. In addition to messing with Texas and other states, Donald Trump's personal efforts to game the elections that he apparently believes his party will lose badly this November has extended elsewhere, from his recent order to the DOJ and FBI to obtain ballots from the 2020 presidential election in Fulton County, Georgia, part of his long campaign to pretend that the 2020 election was stolen from him, though zero evidence more than 5 years later suggests as much, to impotent executive orders blocked by courts attempting to prevent absentee mail voting and force states to purge and or turn over voting rolls, to pressuring Republicans in Congress to pass new laws to force proof of citizenship mandates for newly registered voters under the evidence-free claim that millions of non-citizens unlawfully cast ballots in every election, despite all available evidence to the contrary, including from right-leaning states, that nothing of the kind is actually occurring or ever has. Still, that has not prevented the Trump administration from continuing its pressure campaign on states and counties to run their voter files through a Department of Homeland Security database to determine whether registered voters are, in fact, non-citizens. As ProPublica and the Texas Tribune reported last week, when County Clerk Brianna Lennon got an email in November last year saying a newly expanded federal system had flagged 74 people on the county's voter roll as potential non-citizens, well, she was taken aback. Lennon, who'd run elections in Boone County, Missouri for 7 years, had heard that the Department of Homeland Security's tool, a database named Systematic Alien Verification for Entitlements, or SAVE, might not actually be accurate. The flagged voters' registration paperwork confirmed Lennon's suspicions. The form for the second person on the list bore the initials of a member of her staff who had helped that man register at his citizenship naturalization ceremony. It later turned out more than half of the Boone County voters identified as non-citizens were actually, yes, citizens. A similar situation has been playing out in Texas, where county clerks have likewise found numerous examples of misidentified voters across the state. The source of the bad data was that SAVE database. Once used mostly to check immigrants' eligibility for public benefits, SAVE has undergone a dramatic expansion over the last year at the behest of Donald Trump, who has long falsely claimed that millions of non-citizens lurk on state voter rolls, tainting American elections. At Trump's direction, DHS has pooled confidential data from across the federal government to enable states to mass verify voter citizenship status using SAVE. Many of the nation's Republican secretaries of state have eagerly embraced the experiment, agreeing to upload all or part of their rolls. But in the bargain, as we have reported on this program in recent weeks, after examining, for example, nearly 50 million voter records, officials have been able to find less than 0.01% of voters on the rolls who were non-citizens, and even in those cases, most of them never cast a vote. As we've noted, a check using federal tools by the state of Utah of the more than 2 million voters on their rolls found just one single non-citizen registered to vote, and it does not appear that they had ever done so. In many cases, registrants were found to have noted on voter registration forms handed to them at the DMV, for example, that they were not citizens. Yet, despite that, thanks to clerical errors, they were actually included on the rolls nonetheless, even if they never cast a vote and in many cases had no idea that they were even registered to vote. But As an investigation of SAVE's rollout by ProPublica and the Texas Tribune revealed, DHS actually rushed the revamped tool into use while it was still adding data before it could discern voters' most up-to-date citizenship information. As a result, SAVE has made persistent mistakes, particularly in assessing the status of people born outside of the U.S. who have since become U.S. citizens, a step that the SAVE system does not always pick up. According to correspondence between state and federal officials, DHS has had to correct information provided to at least five states after SAVE misidentified voters as non-citizens when they were actually citizens. Texas and Missouri were among the first states to try the augmented SAVE tool, but in hundreds of cases, in Missouri, for example, the tool's determinations were simply wrong, according to the review by these two media outlets. Lennon, the Boone County, Missouri County Clerk, was among dozens of them statewide who raised alarms about the system's widespread errors. Even counting people flagged in error, the first bulk searches using SAVE have failed to validate the president's claims that voting by non-citizens is widespread. Brian Broderick leads the verification division of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, the DHS branch that oversees SAVE. In an interview this month, he acknowledged that the system cannot always find the most current citizenship information for people who are not born in the U.S., but he defended the tool, saying it was ultimately up to states to decide how to use that SAVE data. While 27 states have agreed to use that data, others have hesitated, concerned not only about inaccuracies, but also about privacy and the data's potential to be used in immigration enforcement. Indeed, speaking at a recent conference, Broderick said that when SAVE flags voters as non-citizens, they're also referred to DHS for possible criminal investigation. It is a crime to falsely claim citizenship when registering to vote, apparently, even accidentally, even if you never cast a vote. But is it a crime to falsely remove someone from the rolls because you think they are a non-citizen, but they are actually a citizen? Does anyone pay the price for that? Sophia Minotti, who lives north of Dallas in Denton County, Texas, was born in Argentina. She became a U.S. citizen years ago. Nonetheless, she was one of 84 Denton County voters identified by SAVE as a potential non-citizen. She and 11 others have since provided a proof of citizenship in the county, giving the system an error rate in that county so far of at least 14%. A 14% error rate. The real rate, as the Tribune notes, is probably higher, a county official acknowledged, since some of those sent notices to prove their citizenship might not have responded in time to meet the deadline. Since voting has already started in Texas, they will have to be reinstated to vote in the midterms later this year. Minotti in Texas said, quote, "I'm here legally and everything I've done has been per the law. I really have no idea why I had to prove it." Again, Susanna Kosazova, who lives in St. Louis, Missouri, was among those who were incorrectly flagged by SAVE on its first pass. Originally from Slovakia, she became a U.S. citizen back in 2019. She showed ProPublica and the Tribune a copy of her naturalization certificate, which she keeps with a letter from Donald Trump congratulating her for, quote, "becoming a citizen of this magnificent land." Overall, she said in response, "it seems like this process has done more to worry people who can vote than to identify actual registered voters who don't qualify." Back in Boone County, where Lennon is the clerk, the count of flagged voters fell from originally 74 down to 33. And the naturalized citizen who Lennon's own staff member had helped to register was no longer on that list. She said, and other counties' clerks said, they would happily accept data that helps them correctly identify non-citizens on their voter rolls. But so far, SAVE has not done that. And until it does, she said, she won't purge voters purely because SAVE has flagged them. "This is not ready for prime time," said Lennon, and I'm not going to risk the security and constitutional rights of my voters for this bad data. Still, while 27 states have voluntarily turned over their voter data to the federal government to cross-check with the flawed SAVE system, 23 states have not, and the Department of Justice has sued them for withholding that information. So far, however, the cases are not going well. Cases against at least four of those states, including California, Oregon, and Georgia, have been tossed by federal courts. But none of that has prevented Republicans in the U.S. House from attempting to federalize elections in order to force the use of the SAVE database and to force voters to prove that they are not just who they say they are by presenting a regular old ID, which is already the law in all 50 states via the Help America Vote Act, but now they must prove under a new law or a new act that Republicans hope will be law that they are citizens when registering to vote, rather than just affirming as much by checking a box under penalty of perjury when registering. So what would the Save America Act actually do if somehow it was turned into law? How much chaos and voter suppression would result? And isn't that actually the point? For more on all of that, stay tuned. Election integrity advocate and social media superhero Jenny Cohn joins us next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com. We fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. Please help us continue that fight over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
Send, send, send me. I can't face this life alone. Send, send, send me. I'm naked and I'm far away.
Yeah. I don't know if that's going to save them either. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Last week, the Republican-controlled House voted to pass the so-called Save America Act, formerly known as the SAVE Act, a sweeping election bill that Donald Trump is pushing Congress to enact. It barely passed, with every Republican voting in favor of it, with just one Democrat, Henry Cuellar of Texas. Every other Democrat voted against it. The 32-page legislation would require states to obtain documentary proof of citizenship in person, such as an American passport or birth certificate from someone, in order to register to vote in a federal election. The bill was revised from an earlier version to include new demands from Trump requiring voters to show photo ID in order to cast a ballot in person. And it slaps new rules for mail-in ballots requiring voters to submit a copy of an eligible ID when requesting and casting an absentee ballot. That is why Republicans now refer to the Save America Act as, well, little more than a common-sense voter ID bill, which many Americans might support, even if it is far worse than that. By requiring proof of citizenship when millions of Americans do not have easy or free access to that proof, even if they are able to register in person, which many perfectly lawful citizens cannot do for a whole bunch of reasons. Quote, the so-called SAVE Act is not about voter identification. It is about voter suppression, said House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries to reporters last week. Jeffries and other Democrats note that the GOP bill comes in the wake of Trump saying that he wants to, quote, nationalize elections and, quote, take over the voting in at least as many as 15 places, unquote. Which I've noted many times on this program, the president of the United States actually has no, zero, none, zero legal or constitutional authority to do, whether he knows that or not, and whether he is just trying to frighten you to believe it or not. Anyway, the Save America bill now heads to the Senate, where it would need a filibuster-proof 60 votes to pass in the 100-seat upper chamber, where Alaska's Republican U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski has already come out against the bill, reminding her GOP colleagues that they claim to be against federal election mandates to states as recently as 2021. Quote, when Democrats attempted to advance sweeping election reform legislation in 2021, Republicans were unanimous in opposition because it would have federalized elections, she said, something that we have long opposed, she noted. Now, I'm seeing proposals such as the SAVE Act that would effectively do just that. Nonetheless, Trump is pushing hard for this bill, lying about it as nothing more than a voter ID bill, even though it would do much more to cause both chaos and, yes, mass voter suppression in our elections, including the one that has already begun in states like Arkansas, North Carolina, and Texas. Our old friend Jenny Cohn has been trying to keep up with the various changes to the SAVE Act, now the SAVE America Act, and has been posting about it on Blue Sky, including how impossibly difficult the new bill would make it for many perfectly legal voters to register to vote. Jenny Cohn is a longtime attorney turned social media advocate and journalist for issues regarding election integrity and, in recent years, white Christian nationalism. Jenny Cohn, thank you for, as you wrote, reading the Save America Act so we don't have to, and thank you for joining us again today on the broadcast.
Hi, Brad.
Great to have you here. It has been a while. Let's quickly step through some of the troubling details that you highlighted in several different threads on the SAVE Act over at Blue Sky over the past week or two, so you can offer a few details on that, and then we can talk about how much of a threat this act really poses to American elections, either this year or even in the future. But I want to start with proof of citizenship ID requirements from this bill. You write that not only must registration take place in person under this bill if it were to become law, but the list of allowable documents would be difficult for tens of millions of Americans to even come up with?
That's right. So when I first heard about the Save America Act, mm-hmm. which was previously called the SAVE Act, mm-hmm. one of the first articles that I pulled up was a Guardian piece, which warned that up to 69 million women could be disenfranchised by this bill because their last names no longer matched their birth certificates mm-hmm. because they'd taken their husband's names. So that was the first thing that caught my attention. And so I went through and I read the bill. Mm-hmm. I've read all versions of the bill as well. And it's true. So that they list a bunch of documents that might suffice, but they're a little tricky about it. So they say, for example, that you could use a real ID if it indicates your citizenship. What they don't say is that only 5 states issue real IDs that indicate your citizenship. So that won't work for the vast majority of Americans.
Well, now let me ask you about that, because the government has been pushing people to update their driver's license to these so-called real ID versions.
Right.
But even that would not qualify as proof of citizenship in most states?
No, it's only 5 states that it would qualify. I believe those 5 states all have Democratic mm-hmm. governors, by the way. Ah. But the reason being that a real ID proves that you're a legal resident in the U.S. So it could either be that you're an immigrant who's here mm-hmm. on a green card legally, or right. that you're a U.S. citizen. So a lot of people are really confused by this because they say, well, I had to bring my birth certificate to get a real ID. So obviously my real ID proves citizenship. And the answer is no, because lots of other people only had to bring their green cards to get their real IDs. So it does not prove citizenship. And in fact, the DHS has confirmed in other contexts, specifically, you know, when they're rounding people up or looking for people to deport, that alone, a real ID alone, does not prove citizenship.
So what does prove citizenship? And setting aside for the moment the married women thing, what is it that would prove you're a citizen under this law?
So for most people, that would mean a real ID or other government-issued ID if and only if presented with a certified birth certificate that matches the name on the real ID or other photo government ID.
So you have to have a birth certificate.
For most, I think that there's, for people who are in the military, it may be different, but for the vast majority of citizens, or you could have a passport. That would, okay, so the easiest way to do it would be to have a passport. That would work for pretty much everybody. But of course, passports, if you've ever gotten one, take a long time to get, weeks and weeks and weeks. And they're very expensive. It's over, well over $100, I believe. My last one, I think, is $160 for my renewal. So that's the easiest way. But if you don't do that, for most people, they will need this certified birth certificate that matches their photo ID that's issued by the government.
And by the way, if the photo ID that you have is your passport, but you got your passport before you then got married a few years later, the passport won't even work to prove you are to prove you're a citizen, will it, under this measure?
I think that's probably correct. I hadn't even thought of that nuance. Yeah, you're smart, Brad. Yes, that's right. I think you're right. So what they did, though, so this has caused an uproar, and this is what has gotten the most attention about their various so-called save bills. Mm-hmm. So they did something kind of sneaky. Well, they did something kind of sneaky in this latest version of the bill. It still omits marriage certificates from the list of approved documents. I mean, how easy would that have been just to add, you know, a certified copy of your marriage certificate or a certified name change document
that,
to the list of approved documents?
That doesn't count? Your marriage certificate shows you got married to this person, which has your initial birth name plus your married name. They're saying that would not count? You can't use that?
Under the old version of the bill, no. Under the current version, they try to make it look like you might still be okay, but it's really illusory. What they say is that for people whose last name, you know, who've changed their names, which could include all those up to 69 million women whose names don't match their birth certificates, and it could also include a lot of people who are transgender or people who just didn't like their last name. Mm-hmm. So for those people, it says that they can still register if their state comes up with an alternative process for them subject to guidance by the Election Assistance Commission. Now, what's key here is they're very vague as to whether states actually have to do this. But even if you read it to mean that they have to do this, they don't give any deadline for the states to have to do this. So that, you know, as you point out, there's early voting has already started
right
for the 2026 election. So it could very well be too late for these people to vote in the upcoming election, in the states that choose not to do this.
Yeah, and they would have to get approval from the EAC. That takes time. Initially, as I recall, in at least one of the versions of the bill, this was not going to kick into effect until 2027. But Donald Trump was had a sad about that, so they changed it to applying to this election that we are now in the middle of, which begs the question of how that could possibly pass muster at the corrupted U.S. Supreme Court, except they're corrupted, so they'll go along with anything when they feel like it. But this is the Brennan Center for Justice issued a report last summer in July warning about the problems with this SAVE database and with the Social Security number database when it's used to purge voters from the rolls, as they note, would occur under the Save America Act. So it's not just preventing people from getting registered, it sounds like. It sounds like this is not just a registration bill, it's also a purge voters bill?
Right. It's to purge people from the voter rolls and then make it difficult for them to re-register. So the thing that really struck me was, like I said, I read the Guardian piece and it had to do with the up to 69 million women, and that's horrible, horrific. Mm-hmm. But then when I read the bill, it occurred to me the bill is actually, the original version of it was called the SAVE Act, mm-hmm. and it had multiple references to the SAVE system, which you described very well in your introduction. Mm-hmm. And I think that appears to have been the original inspiration for the bill, was this SAVE voter purge system, which was, as you point out, the SAVE system previously existed, a narrower version of it, just for purposes of determining eligibility for benefits. Mm-hmm. But Elon Musk's Doge came in and they vastly expanded it, overhauled it into a massive voter purge program that links to a database that has been compromised by Doge employees. and the compromise is no longer disputed. The DOJ has admitted that they mishandled it. They didn't use the word compromise, but they admitted that they mishandled it. They admit, I believe, that they sent some of the confidential data from that Social Security database that is now integral to the Save Voter Purge program to an outside voter suppression group of some sort. But not only that, there is a whistleblower from the Social Security Administration. He was the former chief data officer of the Social Security Administration. And he claims that whatever DOJ did to the Social Security Administration databases was far worse. And he even claims that they copied, they obtained the kind of access that allowed them to copy the entire Social Security number identification system to a cloud server. And the implication also, he also has said that for some Social Security databases, they had the type of access that would have allowed them to edit data.
Well, that actually, yeah, that's what I was going to get to. In fact, there's nothing stopping if there is still access to these people, to these sort of moles inside the government. There is nothing to prevent them. The SAVE database doesn't work, obviously. I shared some of that in the previous segment about how it just, you know, gives all kinds of false positives. But on top of that, if rogue actors have access to that database, they can make all sorts of changes to knock off all sorts of people who actually are citizens, to knock them off the rolls. And then we know how difficult it is for them to become registered again. I mean, it just sounds like this is just an avenue towards havoc. And it kind of sounds like it's on purpose, Jenny Cohn.
It does seem that way. I would say that one of my frustrations has been that I haven't seen a lot of reporting addressing these concerns from an election security perspective. Mm-hmm. And I do think this is an election security nightmare because we don't know what kind of access they gave themselves to this Social Security database that is the cornerstone of their voter purge program now. We don't know if they gave themselves a backdoor to that database.
Right.
So even when used correctly, as it appears they're currently trying to do, it doesn't work, as you point out. It has this really high error rate, and it also doesn't identify. It only identifies like 0.01. It only shows that only like 0.01% of the population of voters were shouldn't have been on the rolls.
Maybe.
And that doesn't prove that shouldn't have been on the rolls, and it doesn't even prove that they voted.
Right.
Right. In fact, they probably didn't. So, but another concern I really have is that in particular, this most recent version of the bill doesn't just require that states use the SAVE program. It actually requires that they send their voter registration lists to the Department of Homeland Security. That's Kristi Noem. That's Harmeet Dhillon, to run it through this SAVE voter purge program. And that creates what's known as a single point of failure. Mm-hmm. So if something goes wrong with that database, with that voter purge program, or with the databases that it relies on, that could wreak havoc in all 50 states and, you know, destroy the integrity and security of the election in all 50 states. That's just not what you're supposed to do if you care at all about the security of our elections, which MAGA claims they do.
Which is one of the reasons why we don't have nationalized elections, that they are decentralized. We don't run them through a single point of failure. And to be clear here, just because this is a lot of information, a lot of data, it can be kind of confusing. This law, now called Save America Act, if it became law, would mandate that all of the states do this, that basically all of the states run their existing voter rolls through this Save database that we know does not work. But there are currently a number of states, mostly controlled by Republicans, 27 of them, I think, that are using this already voluntarily and finding these errors that we know of, that, you know, the Texas Tribune and ProPublica reported on. Now, a lot of folks are understandably sort of freaking out about all of this, understandably, and about Trump's vows to either nationalize elections or have Republicans take them over in 15 jurisdictions. He didn't specify which ones, but and then there's this law pushing it through. Are you worried about these things?
Yes, I'm worried about these things. Now, I understand that in order to get past a filibuster in the Senate, they would require 60 votes, which they do not have and they will not get given the makeup of the Senate and how many Democrats there are and how many Republicans there are.
Right. So why should we worry?
Because they have, well, number one, they're doing this save, they're pushing this save system regardless of the act. But number two, in terms of passing the act, they're pushing the strategy called a talking filibuster. Mm-hmm. And Russ Vought, you remember him, he's the head of the OMB.
Yep.
His organization created this memo, published this memo, which is promoting this strategy. And the idea is that you force the Democrats to speak during, they would make it a single legislative session that just goes on indefinitely by not closing out the session. Mm-hmm. So 24/7, basically, on their feet, make them do a standing filibuster, keep talking. And then the idea would be is if the Democrats run out of people who are physically able to keep going,
yeah,
they claim then they only need 51 votes. And I believe that is correct. I know you're not so sure you agree with me, but they think that if the Democrats physically, again, I want to use the word physically,
yeah,
collapse,
yeah,
and can't keep going, then they only need the 51 votes, which they have.
And listen, and they may, you know, pull off all sorts of tricks or try these tricks and nonsense. But, Jenny, anything that they do here, remember, can be done back against them in turn the next time Democrats are in control of things, no?
In theory, but I think the whole point is that if this bill passes with this vast ability to purge voters through the DHS, Trump's DHS, there will never be Democrats in control again. So it's moot. I have another concern about this physically able.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers have been up to, but Trump pardoned all these people for a reason.
Yeah.
And the thing that's a little bit murky to me is, you know, when they say that Democrats have to keep this going, basically 24/7 standing on their feet. And I don't think all Democrats have to be in the chamber at that time. So what if you had like the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers physically blocking people from getting to the chamber? I mean, I don't really know if that's a possibility, but if it is, I wouldn't put it past them.
Listen, anything is a possibility with these creeps and yutzes who are willing to undermine. I mean,
They could do another January 6th at Congress, make it, you know, shut so that it has to be evacuated. I don't know what that means. I don't know that there's any rule that says that the standing filibuster isn't broken. So they could clear out Congress. I just don't really know, but they've got something up their sleeves and they seem to feel pretty good about it. And the amount of political capital that these people have expended on this bill, they are not doing this for nothing. I wouldn't have started reading the bill and posting about it, but a friend of mine who I do a lot of research with, mm-hmm, she's really good. She kept sending me what their posts were on X, you know, Elon Musk, and he'd get, you know, get himself 36,000 reposts with his algorithms and everything.
Right.
About the Save America Act and Mike Lee, and they dragged out, you know, Scott Pressler is back on the scene and Cleta Mitchell and just all these people talking nonstop about this bill.
Yeah.
So they're not doing it for nothing. They actually do want this to pass, and they seem to think that the talking filibuster will do it for them.
Well, we'll see. And because I could be wrong about all of this, let me be clear. I'm perhaps more sanguine about these things when they come up because I think that, you know, nationalize elections. Well, he has no authority whatsoever to do that. Could he try to, you know, send out ICE, you know, people to surround the polls? Sure, I guess he could do that. I think it would all be challenged in court. I think it would anger people so much that they would end up wanting to crawl across broken glass to get their vote in response. And I kind of feel that's similar with this SAVE Act. It's meant to freak people out. It's meant to be a talking point. Oh, why are Democrats against voter ID, they must have, you know, illegal aliens voting or whatever nonsense they say. But it works to get their own people fired up. At the same time, I think it also works to get their opponents fired up. No?
Well, that's the thing in terms of the opponents fired up. So I wouldn't have even known about the SAVE system had it not been for this enormous political capital that they've expended promoting their SAVE Act and now the Save America Act. I had never heard of it. So in a way, they did us a favor by putting a giant spotlight on this.
Right.
On the other hand, the media really hasn't caught up to that because even the reports that are exposing just how bad the SAVE system is, don't seem to realize, those journalists didn't seem to realize when they published their reports that that is in, that the SAVE system is part of the Save America Act and the SAVE Act. It just hasn't broken through. So, there certainly is a narrative warfare aspect to this, which they seem to think will work to their benefit, even if the bill doesn't pass. That's one of the benefits of a talking filibuster is if the Democrats figure this out and connect these dots, which I'm not sure most of them have. I saw Padilla did mention that the SAVE system is part of this bill and that the SAVE system is terrible. But if so, they could use that during a talking filibuster, and they could use the breaches at the Social Security Administration or the breach at the Social Security Administration to inform the public, I suppose. So it could backfire on them, just like gerrymandering seems to have backfired on them. But I'm worried about it.
And I do understand. It's weird. It's a strange place to be because I have not, I've known about the SAVE Act for years because they've been passing. I think it's like the third session in a row where they've passed it, a bill like it. But as I see it, not likely to pass the Senate, not likely to get over a filibuster. There's always a question. Well, how much do I need to freak people out by telling them about this terrible system that you detailed, Jennifer, how difficult it will be to get to get registered if you have to prove your citizenship? How much do we want to freak people out, and how much do we want to
I think you need to freak people out.
Yeah.
I think you need to freak people out. And I think because if nothing else for the narrative aspect of it, I think we need to let the Republicans know as well that we know that this would create the single point of failure to a compromised system that was compromised by their own people at DOJ.
Well,
I think that they need to know that we know that, and everybody needs to know that. And therefore it is worth freaking people out, even if the bill doesn't pass. And I guarantee you, they have plans that the Center for Renewing America, Russ Votes organization, did not publish about how to ensure that a talking filibuster goes their way, that the Democrats physically can't do it. I guarantee you they have plans up their sleeves, whether they'll work. January 6th didn't work, but it almost did. I think we need to freak people out about it. I do.
Well, I hear you. That's why I brought you here, Jen, to freak people out. Keep it up.
You're welcome. But also to call your senators, and I can't emphasize this enough, if you have Republican senators, call them too.
Yeah.
It's not hopeless because I think it's very important to go on offense because there is no defense to this terrible bill, to what, especially the SAVE system provisions, what they're trying to do with the SAVE system. There is no defense to creating a single point of failure. And there is no defense to forcing everyone to rely on a system that was compromised by DOJ and that we still don't know the extent of that compromise. That's still under investigation and it's being blocked by DOJ. There is no defense to that. And yet they're out there, constantly doing, Roger Stone, his whole thing is attack, 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 never defend. Mm-hmm. Well, honestly, the Democrats need to do that. And just anyone who cares about our elections needs to do that. Not because it's like a clever technique, but because there is no defense to this. There is only a reason to be on offense about this bill. They're putting us on defense.
You can reach your senator at 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. I believe that number works to reach the Senate no matter where you live. Let them know about it and let them know how you feel about it. I it's why I wanted to have you on because, I'm not sure if people should be freaked out or if they should just hear this and realize what's going on so that we can fight back against it without the chaos, without the freaking out. I think it's a sort of a symptom of what TPM's Josh Marshall describes as big loser energy coming from the Republican side, coming from Donald Trump. I don't think it works out well for them. On the other hand, people do need to know about it so we know how to act depending on where they go from here. Jennifer, really?
And at a minimum, they need to know this is not a voter ID bill. This is not a straight, it has a voter ID component to it, but that's what people really need to know.
No, it is much worse than that.
That narrative matters because if everybody doesn't know that, they will use that to go on offense on something else to undermine the election.
Yeah, because they know that people don't really understand photo ID, so they think it's popular, and if they just call this a photo ID, then that's that. But this is much more than that. Between the purges, between the proof of citizenship, between the 69 million American women who would have a difficulty registering under this measure if it ever passes both houses. So we're on the lookout here, and thank you for helping us do that. Jennifer Cohn, you can find her and follow her, as you should, on the Blue Skies at Jenny Cohn. She's a longtime attorney, now turned social media champion for issues like election integrity. Delightful speaking with you, Jen. Hopefully we'll be doing it again between now and November, I suspect.
That would be great. Thanks, Brad.
Thank you. All right, quick break, and we're back with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast. So the Trump administration's reversal last week of the so-called endangerment finding, the EPA's determination that greenhouse gases from the burning of fossil fuels are in fact causing our globe to dangerously warm, threatening human health, et cetera, as a pollutant. Well, that reversal was really the holy grail for climate deniers, because the endangerment finding is what makes all of our subsequent federal measures to regulate those emissions under the Clean Air Act possible and lawful. So, as David Kurtz of TPM's Morning Memo observed last week, quote, beating back the flames of fascism while the fascists fan the flames of global warming is the dual threat 21st century apocalypse that I can scarcely get my head around.
Yes. That's where we are.
I feel you, David, right there with you. As discussed in our latest Green News Report.
The elimination of the endangerment finding is signed, sealed, and delivered.
Fallout grows after Trump EPA revokes the endangerment finding, a key goal of Project 2025. Trump's dismantling of America's climate supercomputer threatens U.S. insurance markets. Plus,
residents and pets should not touch the Potomac River or engage in any Potomac recreational activities, including fishing.
Massive sewage spill in nation's capital is likely the largest in U.S. history.
That perfect metaphor and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
A small geyser of poop water is flooding into the Potomac River. That's right. Washington, D.C. has an unstoppable geyser of poop. And now there's one in the Potomac, too.
Thank you. This is your Green News Report.
That joke, courtesy of Little Richie Dom, age 8.
Okay, Desi Doyen, we finished up last week with this huge story about the endangerment finding, and I guess we are picking up at that very same place this week.
Yes, we are. Late last week, the Environmental Protection Agency under Donald Trump revoked its own scientific endangerment finding that greenhouse gas emissions endanger human health by causing climate change. That underpins the agency's legal authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions that cause catastrophic climate change. The rollback is the most aggressive effort to dismantle U.S. climate policy in the nation's history, a major goal of Project 2025 that took 15 years of effort from right-wing special interest groups and the fossil fuel industry.
Mm-hmm.
The move is almost certain to wind up in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. The final text of the repeal relies on legal arguments alone, not on a widely debunked report by a hand-picked group of climate science deniers. That indicates that the Trump White House is unwilling to risk a court battle over established climate science.
It also means they have no actual science to argue.
Yep. The BBC reports that the repeal of the endangerment finding and tailpipe emissions rules are likely to create significant regulatory uncertainty across a wide swath of industries, like automakers trying to plan U.S. production models while simultaneously meeting standards in international markets where the rest of the world is shifting to electric vehicles. At the Munich Security Conference over the weekend, California's Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom characterized the repeal of the endangerment finding as economic self-sabotage.
A death sentence to legacy American automobile manufacturers. We know where the market's going. China gets it. Look at their GDP growth last year. It was in the clean energy space. This is about economic prosperity and competitiveness. And that's why I'm so infuriated with what Donald Trump has done. It's our fiercest competitor moving forward, China.
Bloomberg News says that revoking the endangerment finding shows that the world's two superpowers are signaling very different paths for the future. And that is based in part on a new analysis from the UK's Carbon Brief, which reports that China's emissions of CO2 have been flat or falling for nearly 2 years straight as it rapidly deploys more wind and solar projects than the rest of the world combined.
And yet we were told by Republicans and Fox News that China would never curb their emissions. They are actually doing so right now. And guess what? We aren't.
Yep. The Trump administration is also quickly dismantling one of the world's top weather and climate research centers, the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado, stripping it for parts. NCAR's massive supercomputer, used for forecasts, climate models, and disaster warnings, will be transferred to an undisclosed third party. Even the nation's insurance industry is against gutting NCAR because insurers use that data for disaster losses and risk modeling. The American Academy of Actuaries warned that disassembling NCAR will lead to higher insurance rates across the U.S.
Mission accomplished.
Finally, in the nation's capital, a major rupture in a sewer line a month ago has spilled more than 240 million gallons of wastewater and raw sewage into the Potomac River. It's one of the largest sewage spills in U.S. history and an ecological disaster. Repairs are underway, but a permanent fix will take months. D.C. officials are warning residents to stay away from the river due to high levels of fecal-related bacteria. And because we live in the dumbest timeline, Donald Trump on Monday falsely blamed Maryland's Democratic Governor Wes Moore for the sewage spill. But Moore's office says that the infrastructure that failed is actually the responsibility of the federal government.
Go figure. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Ooh, that smell. Can't you smell that smell?
Yeah, I can smell it from here.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Thanks again to our guest today, Jenny Cohn. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other since the beginning of time, download them all for free at bradblog.com. Thanks in advance to those of you who click on a donate button to help us stay on your public airwaves. Thank you. You can also go straight to bradblog.com/donate. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.